www.givetowbai.org.
Listening to Bike Snob on WBAI. I'm Eben Weiss. New York City cyclists are snitches. They're whiny tattletales. They're sniveling little rats dropping dimes all over the place. Just check out Twitter and you'll see what I mean. Tweet after tweet of photos of drivers parked in bike lanes. Or riders reporting car service drivers to the TLC. Or low-key vigilantes peeling tape off of obfuscated license plates. Then there are all the tweets directed to 311 or to the DOT. There's snow in the bike lane. There's ice in the bike lane. The paint's faded. There's a construction zone encroaching on it. There's a city employee driving in it, eating a sandwich in it. There's an NYPD officer parking in it so they can write someone a ticket. And the videos, confrontation after confrontation. Do you realize you're parked in the bike lane? Do you realize you just cut me off? Do you realize there's an empty parking spot right across the street? Get off your phone. And so on. Now, I don't resent cyclists for being snitches. I'm a cyclist and I've done plenty of snitching myself. Believe me, I know what it's about. What I do represent is that we're put in a position where we have no choice but to snitch. I don't like doing it. It's not who I am. Even when I know I'm right, it feels wrong. And I often don't do it even when I probably should. So here's an example. Last Monday, I was riding home after doing this show. I was headed uptown on St. Nicholas Avenue in Manhattan, approaching 145th Street. If you ride a bike, you already know this intersection is a disaster because there's an NYPD Transit Bureau there or something like that. And they're all parked in the bike lane there all the time. Anyway, I make my way through that whole mess, and as the light turns green and I start to go, a giant Dunkin' Donuts tractor trailer comes through the red light on 145th Street, honking. It's infuriating. It's infuriating because it's the holidays, and he could just have run me over or run over any of the pedestrians who had also started crossing the street with the light. It's doubly infuriating because even though he didn't run anybody over, he's now stuck in the middle of the intersection and he's completely blocking it. I'm just looking at donuts on the side of a giant truck. And it's triply infuriating, because it's a Dunkin' Donuts truck. Do I really have to sacrifice my safety and my right of way to something as banal as a truck full of munchkins and freeze-dried Beyond Sausage sandwiches? And on top of all this, that very morning, DOT Commissioner Polly Trottenberg and NYPD Chief of Transportation William Morris, that very morning, had announced a crackdown on drivers of trucks and SUVs. Said Trottenberg at the press conference, "I see a lot of dangerous behavior with trucks in my own neighborhood. I see them racing through red lights. I see them backing up in places where visibility isn't good." Yeah, don't we all? And it's hard to think of a more perfect encapsulation of the inefficacy of these crackdowns than a Dunkin' Donuts truck driver running a red light at a busy intersection on a Monday afternoon on Christmas Eve, as half dozen NYPD vehicles sit idly by in the bike lane. Okay, I'm just going to pause for a moment. I'm going to be taking your calls today, 212-209-2877 is the number to call again. That's 212-209-2877. I'm talking about cyclists and tattletaling, being tattletales, and why we do it, and why it's not fair, and why we shouldn't have to do it. So, again, that number to call is going to be 212-209-2877. I'm going to get back to my story now. So the Dunkin' Donuts driver has just run the light, and I was seething after this. And so I stopped, I pulled over, and I took to Twitter. Not to snitch, but more to vent. I wasn't trying to accomplish anything or get justice. I just wanted to fire off a few expletives and blow off steam so I could finish my ride home with a level head. But I guess Dunkin' Donuts saw my tweet, because the next time I looked at my phone, I found a message from them in my DMs. "Hi, can you give us a call at 800 yada 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 so we can get more information? Thanks." I guess I should have felt appreciative for the response. But instead, it made me kind of angry and resentful. I tried to put my finger on why. Part of it was this blithe assumption on the part of Dunkin' Donuts that someone who's riding a bike through the city has the time to make a phone call and then walk them through something that should already be glaringly obvious to them, given how many tickets their truck drivers undoubtedly receive. Dunkin' Donuts is the largest chain store in New York City with 636 locations, which they've got to keep stocked full of culotta fixins and hash browns that taste like cardboard. And as such, I'm sure they're taking full advantage of the city's stipulated fine program, which lets them negotiate down all those fines. It just seemed disingenuous. Like, flood the city with storefronts and huge trucks, then have the nerve with a straight face to ask, "How can we do better?" after one of them almost runs you over. At the same time, even though I was annoyed at Dunkin' Donuts, I was more annoyed at the city and the fact that they've just announced this crackdown. Yet Dunkin' Donuts is apparently more on top of all this than the city is. I mean, they're not on top of it enough to stop at red lights, but they're on top of it enough to DM me. I'm going to take a call. Again, I'm going to remind you the number to call, 212-209-2877, WBAI. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi, WBAI. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Thanks. Peter from New York.
Hi.
For taking my call.
Yeah.
Good morning. I'm a biker myself, but here's the issue. Every day I see bikers breaking the law, going through red lights, being on the sidewalk. If you're a pedestrian, you take your life in your hands. I mean, between the cars and the bikes, you have to look both ways, even when on one-way streets. And I live by the George Washington Bridge. It's been closed for close to 20 years. The south side is just monopolized by the bikers. You cannot go up there.
I'm sorry, what's been closed for 20 years?
close to 20 years since 9/11 has been the George Washington Bridge. And what happened?
Are you talking about the North Walkway being closed?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay. So I'm gonna stop you for a moment, and I'm just gonna, you know, you're a little bit off topic here because what I'm talking about is you know, you're kind of getting in on this kind of 101 cyclists don't obey the laws thing, which you know is a discussion to be had. It's not really the discussion. It's not the theme of this show. I don't know if you're a first time listener. I kind of cover different themes. The fact that the George Washington Bridge has a north walkway and a south walkway, and the Port Authority has kept the north walkway closed for as long as they have is a huge failing on the part of the Port Authority. And the inadequate facilities for cyclists and pedestrians on the George Washington Bridge is absurd and terrible and ridiculous. And of course, there are going to be conflicts when you have the south side of the bridge, which is the cyclist side, the side that doesn't have flights of stairs. As someone who lives by the bridge, you know full well that the north side, which as a cyclist, by the way, the opposite has happened plenty of times where they close the south walkway and cyclists have to take the north walkway and they have to carry their bikes up and down three or four flights of stairs to get across. It's a terrible situation. It is completely indicative of the situation we have all over the city and the region where cars just dominate everywhere and take up all the space, and cyclists and pedestrians are forced to fight for scraps. What's happening on the south side of the George Washington Bridge, because they're doing all this work, is that you're forcing two different users to use this tiny, ridiculously narrow, stupid path, and they're having conflicts. And it's a terrible situation for everybody. Yes, especially for pedestrians. There's a similar situation on the Queensboro Bridge, which is precisely why bike advocates are fighting for more pedestrian access and separate paths, and to have, you know, this is a bad situation. You're right to point this out. As far as the pedestrians taking your life in your hands and people on bikes or on lights, you know, I'm being a little curt with you because this is something I've addressed innumerable times on the program. I encourage you to keep listening. You'll hear this. You know, that sort of behavior on the part of a cyclist is not excusable. However, again, you're in a situation here where everybody is forced into the margins by an infrastructure that is just absolutely jam-packed with cars, and it creates conflict for the rest of us. So, you know, I appreciate the comment and I thank you for calling. And again, I just want to say that's not where I'm going here with a story about snitching, which is where I started off with. But thank you for the call. I'm going to take another call. WBAI, you are on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello.
Hello, WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I just want to add that the Brooklyn Bridge is even worse because they rent bicycles to tourists.
Yeah.
The Brooklyn Bridge is kind of like always been a bike path. I like to take it, but I don't take it no more.
Yeah.
Only responding to the caller about the George Washington Bridge. The Port Authority does us no favors.
Mm-hmm.
Building buildings, not building tunnels or building bridges.
Mm-hmm.
Building buildings is against their charter, but they built that trade center.
Yes.
So they get a lot of money for doing things that they're not supposed to do.
Right. Well,
and part of that is the message that you're trying to carry forward, which is the bikes are sub. I guess the word dominant means the cars are dominant.
Yeah.
Trucks are dominant.
Yes.
The laws are written for dominancy.
Right.
So that people can have dominance.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is a pedestrian, and I drive a car, and I cycle for pleasure and for exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell you that over my 30 years, 40 years living by the Brooklyn Bridge, I have noticed that they don't really address any of the issues having to do with bicycles going too fast or pedestrians getting in the way of the bicycles or the bicycles and the pedestrians being on. Like you said, let me repeat that for the person from New Jersey, the George Washington Bridge and, of course, the Brooklyn Bridge and, like you said, the Williamsburg Bridge, I believe, and the Queensboro Bridge are not really for bicyclists.
Well, you know, the Brooklyn Bridge is, you know, again, we're talking about problematic bridges. The George Washington Bridge is a big problem. The Queensboro Bridge is a big problem as far as having access. Moving on down the East River, the Williamsburg Bridge has good facilities for cyclists and pedestrians whereby they're separated and everybody has pretty ample room and it's easy to avoid conflicts on that bridge because they've done a good job of giving a separation there. Manhattan Bridge is pretty good. Same thing. You have a bike path on one side.
You get a lot of bicyclists on the pedestrian path. I walk the path on the
and vice versa. Yeah, absolutely, and vice versa. And you know that's a problem. But you know, at least the design is fair. Once you're on the bridge, you know the approaches are another story. The approaches could be better for everybody, better signed for everybody, easier for everybody, easier for pedestrians. But at least there's a fair amount of separation. You have the same thing with pedestrians walking on the bike side. But the Brooklyn Bridge is terrible. And the Brooklyn Bridge is a beautiful example of a bridge that is just so poorly utilized and is a special case in a lot of ways because obviously it's an old bridge, it's a historic bridge, it's a tourist attraction, and yet at the same time it's a bridge. And it's a free bridge into Manhattan. People just use it because they don't want to pay tolls. Drivers don't want to pay tolls. They have all these free crossings across the river, including the Brooklyn Bridge. So what we have on the Brooklyn Bridge is a situation where it's unusable virtually as a bicyclist because it's full of pedestrians. Ostensibly, the wooden walkway is split in half. There's a pedestrian side and a bicyclist side. The bicyclist side is always full of pedestrians. And there is a certain type of bicyclist. I will call this type of bicyclist a schmuck. And this schmucky bicyclist will ride across the Brooklyn Bridge and yell at the pedestrians and ring a bell at the pedestrians or blow a horn at the pedestrians or whatever they do and will get incredibly frustrated by the fact that pedestrians are encroaching the bike lane. I disagree with that strongly. The problem there with the Brooklyn Bridge is that, look, it's one of the biggest tourist attractions in the country, probably on the planet. Of course, people are going to want to walk on this bridge. They're going to want to see this bridge. You need to accommodate people who want to walk across the bridge for transportation, pleasure, sightseeing, whatever the case may be. And it is so clear, so obvious that pedestrians need more space on that bridge. And bicyclists, there's obviously a lot of need. There's a lot of people who want and need to cross the bridge by bicycles. They need space as well. They need more space and they need separate space. You know, there's a lot of advocates who say, and I would agree, that what you need to do is take a lane away from the drivers who are just freeloading. They're freeloading. They're driving into Manhattan. They don't want to pay a toll. They don't want to go through the Battery Tunnel. You know, they're going over the Brooklyn Bridge. Take piece of the roadway away from them. Make it a bike roadway. Give the entire walkway to pedestrians. It's a simple thing, and it's really what should be done. And it's none of this is helped by the fact that on the Brooklyn Bridge, you have police there sitting in these Cushman carts or whatever, blocking half the roadway. You know, there were days this past summer where people took pictures of what was happening on the Brooklyn Bridge. There were days when the crowds were so thick, so heavy on the Brooklyn Bridge, it was dangerous. If something happened on the Brooklyn Bridge on one of those peak summer days, there would be a stampede. there would be carnage. It's a ridiculous situation. So, you know, more space on the Brooklyn Bridge for people and less space for cars. I'm going to take another call. Thank you for that call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Manny the Teamster again.
Hi, Manny. I rode my Brompton here today.
Yeah, I love my Brompton, too.
Yeah.
I apologize for the truck driver that caused you grief. Mm-hmm. We're not all buttheads. You know,
I know.
Some of us actually take the road very seriously.
I know that, and I thank you for that. In fact, so, yeah.
You know, speaking of Bromptons, you know, because you can't go very fast on a Brompton, I like to feel like that character called Paulie from Goodfellas.
Yes.
I move real slow because I don't got to move for nobody.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But if I'm going by a bus stop,
yeah,
and there's a bus behind me, watch me haul butt.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I do love my Brompton. And in France, if you go through a red light, they take away your license. Simple as that. They
yeah.
say if you're not smart enough to stop at a red light, you're too stupid to drive, and they take away your license. That's the truth.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. When my cousin, we were in the middle of nowhere, and she slams on the brake. And I said, you know, what's the big deal? And then she explained it to me. They take away your license.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're doing, you know, Paris in particular is doing a lot to reduce motor vehicle traffic in the city and encourage people to ride, use other ways of getting around. And, you know, they're one of many places that are a lot more serious about making the streets safer and the cities more livable. And, yeah, absolutely. I mean, here, what? You get a, you know, maybe you'll get stopped, but in New York City, odds are you're not going to get stopped by a cop if you run a red light in your car. Maybe you'll get a camera ticket, and it's $50, and you're done. And you can get 100 red light camera tickets. You can get 1,000 red light camera tickets in your car in New York City. As long as you pay them, you're fine. It doesn't affect – you don't even get points on your license for those. So, yeah. Absolutely.
And I asked her, why so severe? And she said, simple that, people die.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's very, they take it very seriously there in France.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. Thank you. Thanks for the call. I appreciate the insight. And, you know, yeah, Bromptons. So, you know, I want to go back. I'm going to take a break in a few minutes, but I want to go back to, my encounter with Dunkin' Donuts, with the Dunkin' Donut truck that ran the light. So I was telling a story wherein a Dunkin' Donuts truck ran the light right in front of me. I angrily tweeted about this, and Dunkin' Donuts tweeted back, telling me to please call them. So in the end, you know, I replied to Dunkin' Donuts' concerned tweet with more details about what had happened, but I didn't call them. I did not call Dunkin' Donuts back, partly because this is a broken system. As Manny's talking about, other countries, other cities are doing a lot to make the streets safe. We're not, okay? My ratting out this driver to his boss is going to do nothing to change this situation. Also, partly the reason I didn't call them is because I've just ridden 20 miles from Brooklyn to the Bronx. I just want to get into holiday mode with my family. I don't want to be on the phone with Dunkin' Donuts corporate recounting this experience. I want to get on with my life. And this is why we need more automated enforcement. We need better enforcement. We need Brad Lander's bill to get passed, whereby if you get a certain amount of red light tickets, they impound your car. This whole whining and snitching system, 311, or tweeting out at companies so they do something, or even the DOT announcing these crackdowns along with the NYPD, it's a joke. It works both ways. These crackdowns are driven entirely by whining. It's all whining. It's, you know, if they're cracking down on cyclists, it's because of people going to NYPD build the block meetings and whining and saying a cyclist almost hit me. It's not based on data. It's not based on anything, regardless of what you're complaining about. We have a whole system that works. It's based on enforcement by anecdote. It's unfair to everybody. It's unfair to the person complaining. It's unfair to a person being punished symbolically as a result of the complaint without anything being done to address the underlying issue. Yes, in a way, it's even unfair to that light running truck driver to punish him in a way. Considering he's working in a city that has done such an abysmal job of accommodating delivery vehicles, of creating loading zones for them, of enforcing those loading zones, of keeping them free from double parkers, of vehicles with placards in the dash. The city has done such a bad job up till now of reconciling the need to have delivery vehicles, but really failing to reconcile that with cyclists and pedestrians. And the city is doing more. They're doing more bike lanes. They're doing residential delivery zones now. They are doing more. But this is a relatively recent development. And, you know, it's been the same for so long. And this, you know, this tattling, catch-as-catch-can on car service drivers, on truck drivers, it's just such a frustrating, futile situation. I'm going to take a short break. When I come back, I'm going to take more calls. So I'll see you back here in just a minute.
All right, you know, we're on tour in Germany at the moment, and today I had to call my mother on the phone. And I said, "Hi, Mom, I'm in Cologne in Germany." And she said, "Knut, you know, there was a picture of you in a Norwegian newspaper today." And I said, "Oh, what do you think?" And she said, "Well, Knut, I think you better go and cut your hair." And she said, "You know, son, you look like a monkey." And I said, "Relax, Mom, you know that I've always been a monkey, monkey, monkey face, monkey, monkey, monkey face, monkey, monkey, monkey face, monkey, monkey, monkey face. This song is called The Monkey Face."
Hi, we're back. This is Bike Snob on WBAI. I'm Eben Weiss. I'll be taking your calls today. 212-209-2877 is the number to call. I was talking about cyclists being tattletales riding around the city, taking pictures of people parked in bike lanes, tweeting them at government agencies and law enforcement and so forth, and the system that sort of requires us to do that, and how I resent having to do that. I feel uncomfortable doing it. I don't feel like I should have to do it. I feel like this is something that puts us at odds with everybody around us, and really just kind of adds to the conflict out there, and it's really a result of underlying problems not being addressed. So please call in 212-209-2877 if you'd like to relay your thoughts, feeling, experiences with tattling on motorists, or maybe you're a motorist and you've had a cyclist rat you out. Maybe you're an Uber driver or a cab driver and a cyclist has reported you for blocking a bike lane and you've been fined. So go ahead and call in. In the meantime, I want to move on to another subject, an important one, the subject of e-bikes in New York City. So back in June of this year, the state legislature passed a bill that would have legalized e-bikes and e-scooters in New York. Just in case you didn't know, e-scooters, electric scooters, not technically legal in New York. And e-bikes, only certain types of e-bikes are legal. Those are the pedal assist e-bikes that just give you a little help when you pedal. There are other kinds of e-bikes that are technically illegal, even though they're all over the place. So this bill to legalize e-bikes and e-scooters and create a regulatory framework for them was sponsored by State Senator Jessica Ramos, and it was of particular importance to New York City's bicycle delivery workers, who currently ride a specific type of e-bike that is technically illegal. So here's a little backstory. Back in 2017, Mayor de Blasio announced a crackdown on delivery workers riding illegal e-bikes. The crackdown was precipitated entirely by the complaints. Remember, I was talking about people complaining and how this is a culture and a system of complaining and tattling. Well, this crackdown on e-bikes was precipitated entirely by the complaints of one cranky rich guy on the Upper West Side who called into the Brian Lehrer Show during one of de Blasio's Ask the Mayor segments. Notwithstanding anecdotes about delivery people riding on the sidewalk or what have you, there's absolutely no data to back up the notion that delivery workers riding these technically illegal e-bikes are even remotely a public safety risk. This past spring, Streets Blog found that of over 11,000 injured pedestrians in 2018, only 9 were hit by riders on e-bikes. You know, 9 is 9 too many, but not exactly an epidemic. In total, in 2018, e-bikes injured 32 people, and 23 of those injured were the e-bike riders themselves. Yet, for the past 2 years, the NYPD has been cracking down on e-bike riders, delivery workers mostly, fining them and confiscating their bikes. Now, remember, these are mostly immigrants, and delivering food in New York City is one of the worst paying, highest risk, all around difficult jobs out there. Anyway, Ramos's bill was meant to address this. It would also have opened the door for scooter share in New York, though the final version of the bill would have prohibited shared e-scooters from operating in Manhattan. And since this bill was passed this summer, this bill that would have legalized these bikes delivery workers are riding and spared them from this crackdown they've been subjected to, the bill since the summer has sat on Governor Cuomo's desk awaiting signature. However, last week, the day after Christmas, perhaps when he figured nobody would be paying attention, Cuomo vetoed the bill. Here's what he said via Twitter. Quote, "There is no need for us to choose between legalizing e-bikes and safety, and I will propose a bill that does both on January 8th. So what does that even mean? I just told you there's no compelling data of any kind that indicates e-bikes are a safety concern. Well, among other things, what Cuomo's tweet means is helmets. According to Streets Blog, I'm quoting from Streets Blog, Cuomo also wrote that a recent study published in the American Journal of Otolaryngology, I'm mangling that word, concluded that head injuries have tripled in the past 10 years due to the use of these motorized vehicles. And of these injuries, 2/3 of the victims were not wearing helmets. But Cuomo declined to point out that this study only looked at the use of e scooters. Okay, so he's vetoing this e-scooter, e-bike bill based entirely on a study that says in the last 10 years, head injuries for e-scooter users have tripled. Okay, now, firstly, I should point out that commercial cyclists in New York are already required to wear helmets. Secondly, scooters. Let's look at the scooter study Cuomo cites. It's from Rutgers. Here's a summary of this study from Rutgers today. Okay, basically the study, quote, analyzed records in the Consumer Product Safety Commission's National Electronic Injury Surveillance System between 2008 and 2017 to determine the types and frequency of head and facial injuries resulting from motorized scooters. The system collates data from about 100 participating hospitals, which is then extrapolated to provide national estimates on injuries related to consumer products. The researchers found that over the decades studied, emergency departments recorded 990 head or facial injuries sustained from electric scooter use, or 32,000 estimated injuries nationwide. The incidences tripled annually from an estimated 2,325 nationwide in 2008 to an estimated 6,947 in 2017. Okay, we have some calls. I'm going to pause. I'm talking about Cuomo vetoing the e-bike and e-scooter bill. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Terry. I'm calling from Long Island.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to say, I think that your decision to call your company about the Dunkin' Donuts driver was the correct decision, because the person either was not paying attention, you know, and maybe not deliberately being negligent, or the person, you know, is someone that is negligent and doesn't really care about what's going on with their driving, which can harm them and harm other people. And so I don't think that that's snitching and being a tattletale. I do agree with you that if someone is using their time to catch people that are doing things, they're watching, they're surveying people to try to catch people to report them, I think that is snitching and tattletaling and pretty childish. But I think any time you do something in order to try to protect yourself and other people and you make this statement out to people publicly, it makes people aware to check themselves, not just to check other people, but to check their own driving. And the last thing I want to say is, in terms of Dunkin' Donuts wanting you to call, I think that was more about their name, you know, their label, and being concerned about their reputation. And what they should have done is, when you made that call, contact their driver and warn them about their driving.
Okay, yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the insight there. The caller is saying that, yes, there are times such as this one when, yes, you should call. You should record this information. You should let people know and that this was the right thing to do, and it's about safety. Thank you. Thank you so much for the call. Another call. Thank you. Have a great day. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Good morning. It's Anthony from Brooklyn. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you? Anthony?
Fine. So, I had to take you off speaker cell phone for a second.
Oh, okay.
So, just listening to the e-bike. The e-bike issue is something I have a big issue with as a bicyclist and a driver. The fact that it's stealth, the fact that you can't hear it, and the fact that these people that are on the e-bikes are people that are working for businesses. The business is, you were able to call a Dunkin' Donuts truck because you've seen the word Dunkin' Donuts on the truck.
Right.
Visible, it's advertisement. E-bike drivers are working for restaurants. There is no identification on who they are. And they go down. They go from point A to point B. And I've said this in the past. I live in downtown Brooklyn. It's very congested by people, bikes, and cars. Understandable. But my point is, they go down the wrong street, And you're, even if you're driving down Smith Street, where I live, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, on a block that's not coming in your direction, a bike comes down upon you. I can still feel it right now, with the bike, even when I'm crossing the street. And the bikes are coming from the opposite way because they're not following the traffic path.
All right. No, you know, I know you've called in and you've spoken about this before, and I know this is a concern you have, and you're not alone, and I would never sit here and say that this sort of thing doesn't happen. Obviously, it does, and there are delivery riders out there who are riding against traffic, doing whatever. You know, what I think the disaster here with Cuomo vetoing the bill is precisely because of what you're citing. You know, what he's doing is vetoing a bill that would have placed these type of bicycles into a regulatory framework. Now there's you know, another iteration of the bill will come, and even though it's been vetoed, Cuomo will come back and he'll try to put his language in it. It's going to be a lot about helmets, which are required for these riders already. And I'd also like to add that, you know, you say, I saw the Dunkin' Donuts truck. I could see it was a Dunkin' Donuts truck, a rider. You can't tell who they're working for. Technically, you know, just as there's a helmet law in the city for food delivery cyclists, they're also supposed to have identifying numbers so that they can be connected to who they're working for. So that is there. And, you know, so plus, you know, placing these bikes in a regulatory framework, plus the rules we already have in the city for delivery riders, you know, all of this needs to happen. These bikes need to be legitimized, and the riders and the jobs they do need to be legitimized, and cracking down doesn't help. What helps is, you know, legalizing these bikes, regulating and improving working conditions for these riders. You know, it's a whole other issue. You get and start getting into the gig economy and the app-based delivery systems and what it's encouraging them to do. There's a whole host of issues at play here. But, you know, the answer is not to just keep these bikes illegal and get hung up on helmet laws and all the rest of it, and delay. You know, we've been, whether it's e-bikes or e-scooters or whatever, we've been very, very slow to address them and acknowledge that they're an integral part of a 21st century city and a streetscape. But, you know, you're right that that does not excuse that sort of riding. And, you know, I'm not dismissing that out of hand. I'm just saying we need to move forward and be better about it. But thanks for the call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, my name is Heidi, and I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Hi, Heidi.
Hi. So I just want to let you know I am a bike rider and a driver, car driver. Mm-hmm. What I do is I have a bike rack on the back of my car, and I often use my bike to go places that you can't find parking, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To the subway, et cetera. So I just wanted to make a comment about the Dunkin' Donuts thing. I feel like as bike riders, we are healthy people. I would encourage us to think of ourselves as healthy people because not everybody can ride a bike on the street. So I feel like we have to be like a role model for people and tell people like, hey, the climate is in a crisis. Ultimately, we're going to need more alternative ways of transportation. You know, please support us. And the comment about your Dunkin' Donut incident, I would encourage you, you could still do it, to call Dunkin' Donuts and get them to lobby somebody to make more better bike lanes and all the other things you keep talking about, better traffic signs and everything for bikers, because they have a lot of money and America runs on Dunkin'. So how about making America run with bikes instead of cars? And you know?
Yeah.
So that's my comment about that.
I appreciate
it. Role model.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You're right. There is maybe there's something to be leveraged there with Dunkin' Donuts. And, you know, certainly Dunkin' Donuts should have an interest in lobbying for better infrastructure because, you know, as I said, and you're right, you know, bike infrastructure does not have to be mutually exclusive to the goal of delivering things in trucks. In fact, really the thing that's in the way in all our way, whether you're somebody working to bring things places or you're somebody getting around by bicycle, is just the sheer number of private cars out there that are taking up a huge amount of space. And as a sidebar, I love that the caller is what's called a multimodal traveler, is driving but is using the bike to fill in the gaps, you know, using the bike when parking isn't available or inconvenient, using the bike to get to trains. Riding a bike doesn't have to be an all or nothing proposition. I say this all the time. I feel it very strongly that, you know, just because you ride a bike to get around doesn't mean that you have to forego every other form of transportation. It's can often be used to fill in the gaps. You know, I mentioned earlier, I rode a Brompton here, which is a type of folding bicycle. It's a miserable day outside. I knew I wanted to ride. I didn't know if I wanted to ride the whole way. I didn't know if I wanted to ride home. Maybe I'd want to get on the train. I have a folding bike with me. I can hop on the train. I don't have to commit to it 100%. But, you know, I thank you for that. You're absolutely right that there's more we can do and there's more to be leveraged. And I was probably a little apathetic when I got resentful at Dunkin' Donuts for reaching out. And I appreciate that feedback. Thank you so much. I want to move back to the e-bike and e-scooter bill that Cuomo just vetoed, based in part on his concerns over a scooter study that says head injuries from e-scooters have tripled between 2018 and 2017. Okay, e-scooters injuries tripled between 2008 and 2017. That's maybe it sounds bad to you, but I hear that, I think, big freaking deal. Why? Well, in 2008, there was barely any such thing as an e-scooter. It was something the weird techie bro in the cubicle next to you rode to work. That was it. There was basically no such thing as large-scale scooter share until, like, 2017. That's when Bird and Lime were founded. At which point, people suddenly started making lots and lots of scooter trips. And I mean lots, millions of scooter trips per year, millions. So, of course, the injury rate is going to go up. This thing went from nothing to millions overnight. It's like literacy. Before the printing press, almost nobody could read. After the printing press, everybody could read. Vetoing an e-scooter bill because there's supposedly a head injury epidemic from scooters is like banning Gutenberg's press because all of a sudden there's a paper cut epidemic. There were a few monks with books, then everybody, now everybody's reading paperbacks on the beach. Of course, there are going to be more paper cuts. Are there safety concerns with scooters? Yes. And by the way, feel free to call in and share your feelings, experiences with scooters. E-bikes 212-209-2877 is the number. So are there safety concerns with scooters? Yes. But they're the same safety concerns that apply to bikes, specifically that we need adequate infrastructure to support them. Now, I've spent a lot of time wallowing in these scooter statistics because it dovetails a lot with bike statistics. I've written a lot in a column I write for Outside Magazine about these scooter studies because the media loves to go crazy over these scooters and how it's certain death to step on these e-scooters. And, you know, here in New York, we don't have scooter shares. So all we see are these headlines about how, you know, scooters are certain death
and everyone's cracking their heads open on these things. And, you know, we still don't have them, and Cuomo just vetoed a bill that would maybe give us access to them. Okay, so bike share now is widely regarded as safe because it is. People freaked out before City Bike, but guess what? Bike share is safe. Meanwhile, at first blush, in terms of raw injury and death numbers, scooter share looks at first like maybe it's a little less safe than bike share. Not wildly less safe than bike share, but a little less safe. But here's the thing about scooter share. Scooter share has officially eclipsed bike share in terms of the number of trips. Way more people ride shared scooters now nationwide than ride shared bicycles. Furthermore, unlike bike share, scooter share often operates in places with lousy infrastructure. If you consider City Bike is the biggest bike share system in America by far, and it accounts for a big piece of America's total shared bicycle ridership. And City Bike's in New York, where there's lots of bike infrastructure. And City Bike is expanding in lockstep with this bike network. So, of course, it's going to be relatively safe. Meanwhile, a disproportionate number of scooter share deaths have happened in Atlanta, where there's lousy infrastructure. It's not that scooters are inherently that much more dangerous. It's that they're in more dangerous places. And there are a whole lot more scooters, as I said, than shared bikes out there. So scooter share, bike share, about equal in terms of safety. Scooter share, head injuries, of course, have gone up, but only because scooter share went from not existing to being massively, massively popular. But here's Cuomo using this as the basis to veto a bill into which he's almost certain to insert some kind of helmet law. You know, this is all about Cuomo wanting to rub his scent all over this bill. And it's all about Cuomo. When Cuomo gets on a bike, he gets on a big 88 cubic inch Harley Electric Glide with the state seal on the fairing. So, of course, he's going to think anyone sitting on anything with two wheels should be made to wear a helmet. The upshot of all of this, of this delay and hanging up everything on some nonsense helmet requirement and whatever else he wants to put in there, is that delivery people are going to keep getting harassed for riding e-bikes. And depending on whatever helmet language winds up in the bill, there's also the possibility this helmet requirement could seriously undermine the accessibility that gives e-bikes and e-scooters such potential. Whether it's bike share or scooter share, these things work because you can grab them and use them on a whim. City Bike would fail if there was a helmet requirement. If you had to find a foam hat to wear before you got on a City Bike to ride 9 blocks, nobody would use City Bike. In Melbourne, Australia, where there's a helmet law, their bike share system was just scrapped. It doesn't work. In Seattle, they had a docked bike share. Seattle has a bike helmet law. Their docked bike share system tanked, probably, at least in part, because of a helmet requirement. And then also, you know, people, I had someone call in last week who was adamant about helmets and the importance of helmets. And, you know, here's the thing, let's forget about safety for a moment. Helmets and helmet laws, such as, Cuomo, it seems, wants to put into this, e-bike law, open up a whole other pretense for biased police enforcement. It's a whole new excuse for stopping people. Okay. The Tampa Bay Times did an investigation back in 2015 and found something interesting. I'm quoting from the Tampa Bay Times.
And again, feel free to call in, 212-209-2877. I'm going to take a call in just a moment. I want to read to you from this Tampa Bay Times study, investigation. This investigation found that Tampa police are targeting poor black neighborhoods with obscure subsections of a Florida statute that outlaws things most people have tried on a bike, like riding with no light or carrying a friend on the handlebars. Officers use these minor violations as an excuse to stop, question, and search almost anyone on wheels. The department doesn't just condone these stops, it encourages them, pushing officers who patrol high-crime neighborhoods to do as many as possible. There was the 56-year-old man who rode his bike through a stop sign while pulling a lawnmower. Police handcuffed him while verifying he had indeed borrowed the mower from a friend. There was the 54-year-old man whose bike was confiscated because he couldn't produce a receipt to prove it was his. Do you ride around with a receipt? I don't. One woman was walking her bike home after cooking for an elderly neighbor. She said she was balancing a plate of fish and grits in one hand when an officer flagged her down and issued her a $51 ticket for not having a light, with late fees that has since ballooned to $90. She doesn't have the money to pay. The Times analyzed more than 10,000 bicycle tickets Tampa police issued in the past dozen years. The newspaper found that even though blacks make up about a quarter of the city's population, they receive 79% of the bike tickets. By the way, if you can balance a plate of fish and grits or pull a lawnmower while you're riding a bike, you don't deserve a ticket. You deserve an award. But this is another reason to be really concerned about helmet legislation going into this e-bike bill, because again, it opens up the door for that sort of enforcement. It has the potential of depressing ridership, and for commercial cyclists, working cyclists, people who ride bikes for a living, there is already a helmet requirement. I'm going to take one last call, I think, before we sign off. WBAI, you are on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
From Brooklyn.
Hi, Brad.
So when I used to work in Manhattan, I would bicycle in once or twice a week. And the thing about bicycling is the ones who do it often, I was scrupulously careful about the traffic laws. I observed, I would signal, and good bikers, you know, the ones who see in the spandex and all that, they signal, they stop, they look, they're alert, they stay in the bike lane. The problem with the e-bikes is that they don't observe all of these. I'm not so concerned about injuries to them and them not wearing a helmet. I think the more important thing is that other vehicles on the road are being impacted. That's really what I wanted to share.
All right. You know, I appreciate that observation. You know, it's interesting how subjective a lot of this stuff is. And, you know, I want to first address your comment that, you know, the quote, the good bikers, the ones in spandex are hand signaling and riding in the bike lane. You know, this is an interesting observation because I could probably find you 10, 20, a million internet comments or social media comments or comments made to news stories. I mean, I hear it all the time that these bikers in spandex are crazy and don't stop at the lights and are almost running me over in the park and so forth. So, that, you know, that's not refuting what you see. It's just so interesting how subjective all of this stuff is. And, you know, as far as the e-bike riders, you know, not following the laws and doing whatever, again, you know, this is a case where there's observations, but there's also data, and the data is showing that, you know, for concerns based on these sort of subjective impressions, that the data isn't really there that they're causing more injuries or anything like that than riders on ordinary bicycles. So I think it gets a little bit tricky when we're all honing in on our own things and drawing our own conclusions, but there's also the data. And, you know, as far but yes, at the same time, are sort of this vetoing this bill and taking so long, you know, what we really haven't done, and I said this a little bit earlier, is we haven't acknowledge the fact that these things are all here. There's e-bikes, there's e-skateboards, there's e-scooters, there's people like going around on those one-wheeled things. They look like Rosie from the Jetsons whizzing around. There's just all sorts of electronic vehicles. And instead of sort of, making these helmet laws and delaying the legislation, we sort of need to recognize that they're here. They do have a lot of potential in terms of efficiency. And we need to work quickly and move to incorporate them in a safe way and utilize them to their full potential. They do have a lot of potential to move people around over short distances, places where there may not be a bus or a subway. But I thank you for that call. And everybody, I just want to thank you for listening. This has been Bike Snob with Eben Weiss. Thank you for listening. Ride safe out there and have a happy New Year.